In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Welcome back. Thanks for listening to the show. We gave away tickets an hour ago to Jason Aldean at Jiffy Lube Live. Our guy Money Metal Chris gave those tickets out. I guess the winner was fired up, right? I'd imagine they're steamed up for the concert. Big Jason Aldean fan. We got another pair we're giving away tomorrow right at 4 o'clock. So make sure you're listening. That is a hot ticket in town. All of our training camp and football coverage on the Fan today is brought to you by our friends at Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenrysWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. Danny, I told you, I've been putting a lot of work into finding some audio.
You've been talking about this audio vault for a couple days.
Darius and I have been logging the midnight oil, sending clips. It is time to enter the now very creepy audio vault.
Right this way. Step into the audio vault.
As Grant and Danny present the best audio from around sports and entertainment.
Again, I don't know how we got here with the Halloween audio vault.
Tales from the Crypt. I'm like, whoa.
You will never see your parents again. What?
I just Any wanted... last words?
No, dude.
I just wanted to play a funny clip. I just wanted to see what Tom Brady said about quarterbacks. All right, this is some of the best audio we found online. Brady on rookie QBs. By the way, Tom Brady did a big interview with Stephen A. Smith on stage. I don't know what that was. It looked like a live podcast or something last night. Don't really care what it was, but it was basically a Stephen A. Smith extravaganza. Mm-hmm. Tom Brady answered some questions that made me go, this guy is going to be very good as an analyst and a broadcaster. Thoughtful, just said things that were smart. I don't know if he's going to get the timing down right away or the in-game part of it. The broadcasting part of it has to come. But Tom Brady is going to add a lot as just a football thinker in this industry. But this was Brady on rookie quarterbacks.
There used to be college programs. Now there are college teams. You're no longer learning a program. You're learning a playbook. And the program is ultimately like in Michigan. For me, that was a pro-style program. 5 years, I got to learn how to drop back pass, to read defenses, to read coverages, to be coached. I had to learn from being seventh quarterback on the depth chart to moving up to third to ultimately being a starter. I had to learn all those things in college. That was development. Then I went to New England, and I was developed by Coach Belichick and the offensive staff there. I didn't start my first year. I think it's just a tragedy that we're forcing these rookies to play early. But the reality is the only reason why they are is because we dumbed the game down, which has allowed them to play. It used to be thought of at a higher level. We used to spend hours and hours in the offseason and training camp trying to be a little bit better than next year. But I think what happens is it discourages the coaches from going to deep levels because they realize the players don't have the opportunity to go to a deep level. So they're just going to teach them where they're at.
A lot in that clip, but the juxtaposition between a football program and a football team in college, I thought that was brilliant. I loved it. I also can't help but think about Jaden Daniels and, to a lesser extent, Bo Nix. Two guys who are older as rookies, who played in college forever, in Nix's case, and almost forever in Daniels' case. Two guys who have been at multiple programs and had to learn multiple offenses from multiple coaches and really did basically develop over time rather than just being prospects who are now 21 and drafted and ready to play in the league. But I thought that was a really, really smart point about I went to a football program.
Yeah.
Now you go to a football team.
It's a contrast I hadn't thought of before, but I understand exactly what he meant after he kind of gave his follow-up and explanation there. I tend to agree in large part. The guys have gotten faster and stronger and quicker, And, you know, it used to be it was crazy if there was a 300-pound lineman, they would feature it. John Madden would go on and on about how this guy was 300 pounds. Now high school kids are 300 pounds, and it's normal that, you know, in everybody's conference and division, there's a half a dozen guys that are that big. Just the world is changing in that regard. And I know that the concepts and ways people view certain things is really advanced, and we have all these different trends and things like that. But the game has changed. I do think it's dumbed down to a degree. And the positive way that we think of it, like there's a lot of Saturdays on Sunday now. Well, there was a reason there used to be such a huge dividing line. Yeah, part of it was you threw more, you guys started to throw more at lower levels. But the other part is the idea that you put your quarterback in harm's way when he's going to be in harm's way anyway, just being in the pocket, seems crazy, like a crazy concept for so many different years. But now it's commonplace. If you don't have a guy that can make plays off schedule, do you even have a guy, bro? I mean, that's kind of where the league is at this point. So I think there's a lot to that. But the thing, the only counter I would offer is sometimes someone can. Sometimes a rookie's really good, and you could just play that guy. There's no hard and fast rule.
How about this from Tua Tagovailoa? He was talking about Brian Flores. He was on Dan Lebatard's show. And Tua, in discussing Brian Flores, his former head coach, talked about what it was like to, in his words, kind of get beaten down by your coach and start doubting yourself. And I think this goes beyond football, whether this is exactly how Flores treated him, who kind of took some issue with it today at the podium, or not. The idea that being built up is better than being torn down by leaders is something I think a lot of us can resonate with.
To put it in simplest terms, if you woke up every morning and I told you you suck at what you did, that you don't belong doing what you do, that you shouldn't be here, that this guy should be here, that you haven't earned this right, and then you have somebody else come in and tell you, dude, you are the best fit for this. Like, you are accurate. You are the best whatever. You are this. You are that. Like, how would it make you feel listening to one or the other? You see what I'm saying? And then you hear it. You hear it, regardless of what it is, the good or the bad. And you hear it more and more. You start to actually believe that. I don't care who you are. You can be the president of the United States. You have a terrible person that's telling you things that you don't want to hear, or that you probably shouldn't be hearing, you're going to start to believe that about yourself. And so that's sort of like what ended up happening. And it was, I mean, it's basically been, 2 years of training that out of not just me, but, you know, a couple of the guys as well that have been here since my rookie year all the way till now.
Tua on Brian Flores. Pretty damning. Now, Flores is very popular in the Vikings building with defensive players who took his back here, as they've spoken the last couple of days. And I don't even really care to get into the Flores part all that much. It's kind of a he said thing. But I even think as a parent, you know, that this is thought-provoking. This is interesting. When my son is being annoying at night and not going to bed and coming out saying, I need water, I need Sweetie Pug, I need my blanket, I didn't get enough to eat, I need you, I need mom, you know, whatever it is for this 18th time that he comes out, rather than, hey man, you got to do, like, you're terrible at this, like, what are we doing here? The time that he goes to bed, the praising, the over the top, you're the best going to bed guy, like, just the positivity over the negativity, I think generally for people brings out a lot.
Yeah, but the other thing I would not counter with, but also add, is everybody's different, right? Some people need the stick, some people need the carrot, some are in between. If that was interpreted as like personal insults and burying you and knocking you down, then I'm sure that probably wasn't a great relationship between the two guys. And Brian Flores had some comments as well that I actually thought were moving and heartfelt as kind of a response. Didn't take any shots. I thought it was very well delivered. But, you know, some guys, you know, thrive on that. Like, you tell Michael Jordan he can't do something, watch how it gets done. You tell Tom Brady he can't do something, watch how it gets done. That's not how Tua's wired, and that's okay. Everybody's, you know, different. I mean, there are different learning styles, different playing styles, what people need. I think it's up to the coach to bring out the best in every player. Sounds like Flores didn't do that with Tua. I mean, just again, kind of according to Tua's statements. But there's a thing that happens a lot of times, too, with kids, just to be on my soapbox for a second, is they treat coaching as a personal insult. In other words, like, and I know it happens sometimes with my own kids, but even others, where I'm going, like, hey, buddy, like, try to, you know, whether it's my son or someone else, hold your hands a little bit higher. Instead, they're down here by your waist. Hold them up by your shoulder. That'll give you a better chance to hit the ball. And they take it as, like, a personal insult that, like, they're not good or they're messing up or something like that. So, no. These are coaching points. That can be hard for kids to learn at times.
All right, Julian Edelman is now an analyst as well. I'm old enough, like you are, Danny, to now know all the analysts as guys whose careers I watch. That's where we are. It used to just be, he's the old guy who talks about football on that channel. Now it's like, oh, I remember that catch Julian Edelman made. Oh, I remember when Brady threw that touchdown. Most of them are former Patriots as well, so figure that one out. Julian Edelman, though, is this a swipe at Lamar? I'd say yes.
I've learned my lesson. I'm never betting against the Chiefs again, okay? I will never bet against them. I lost a lot of money, but it's not up to the Chiefs. We all know what the Chiefs are. They got Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Spagnuolo, Chris Jones, and everyone. It's up to everyone else. We need to see a Joe Burrow come out and do something, stay healthy, start fast. We need to see Lamar Jackson, who's been on a milk carton in the playoffs. So he's missing.
Milk carton in the playoffs, he's missing. As you can imagine, I think there are some Ravens fans who probably didn't take all that well to that comment. That was via Fox. He was talking to Carissa Thompson on the sideline before a preseason game the other night. But I think it's fair to say that Lamar has struggled and that his production has not been as good in the playoffs. I don't do the he can't play in the playoffs, that guy can't hit in October thing. I think that's all silly. It's a sample size issue. It just hasn't happened yet. It's not like there's a certain month of the year where Lamar can't play quarterback or A-Rod can't hit or something. All of a sudden, A-Rod went crazy in 09. The Yankees won the World Series, and then he could hit in the playoffs. But I think it's just irrefutable right now to say that he has come up small from time to time in the postseason, including last year when he struggled at home in an AFC Championship game against Kansas City. But to say it that way, I thought, like, he was the only guy you took a shot at individually there. You know what I mean? Like, you're talking about teams. You reference Burrow needing to start fast. But then it's like, to me, it's the Ravens have not played well enough. If one of Lamar's receivers doesn't fumble at the goal line last year, that game might go
they're tied
a little bit differently. So I don't think it's just a Lamar Jackson point, although I understand at quarterback, that's how it often ends up.
It is so interesting to me that, and we've talked about this a bunch, I just feel, I'm not saying Edelman specifically, but just in general, there's this waiting for the Ravens to lose, as everybody has done to the Chiefs, except for the Patriots when the overtime rules were stupid. Everybody has lost to the Chiefs. Nobody beats Mahomes and company. One time it happens, right? So because they haven't done it yet, and maybe they'll never do it because Pat Mahomes is probably the greatest ever, and he's just walking among us right now, throwing behind-the-back passes in preseason, hanging out. Doesn't even matter who his receivers are. They won a Super Bowl. Doesn't matter. But because they haven't done it, people are waiting, and as soon as the Ravens lose, it's like, I told you that you couldn't do it with Lamar. Josh Allen doesn't get the same treatment. Joe Burrow doesn't get the same treatment. I know they went to a Super Bowl, but it's...
I would disagree a little bit. I think Burrow does not, who got to a Super Bowl. Allen certainly does. That's been a huge talking point. Peyton Manning got crap forever because he only had won one Super Bowl or hadn't won a Super Bowl.
Or hadn't won it yet.
But people still joan on Aaron Rodgers as a playoff loser and wait till he plays San Fran. That guy's got a ring, and he only has one ring. Who cares about the MVP?
Because enough deposits have happened for Rodgers where now it's a different narrative. But for whatever reason, I feel like maybe I'm looking for it. I don't know. But it's hard to – I'll point it out next time I see it. But there's this partly because of the playing style is so unique and so different, partly because what Jackson does as a two-time MVP, the expectations are out of whack to me. I guess is my only point.
There is something to – I think we'd be remiss if we acted like the playing style isn't a factor in some way. When it's like a quarterback – who runs as much as he does has never won a Super Bowl. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so there is this, like, can you do it this way thing, which is probably silly and ridiculous. Of course you can. It just hasn't happened yet. But I would just disagree on the Allen part. I think he has been vilified as a playoff loser, which isn't fair because he just runs into Mahomes. Like, but
Lamar
has actually legitimately struggled in a lot of these games. 14 of 29 in a playoff game, 48% lost. 31 of 59, 52%. As a favorite against the Titans with two picks, lost. They got eliminated at Buffalo. They lost 17-3. He threw for 160 yards, no touchdowns, and a pick. Then you go back to last year against the Chiefs, 54% complete, one touchdown, one pick. And remember the weird thing last year? He just stood in the pocket and, like, refused to run?
Well, it's like whoever was in charge of that. I don't know if it was him. I don't know if it was the OC. I don't know what that was. That was like
Todd Monken.
Yeah,
maybe?
We'll show you. We'll do it this way. And I'm going, oh, my God, stop doing that. Stop doing it that way. What a huge mistake you're making.
Yesterday was the four-year anniversary of Tom Brenneman saying something terrible on television. He got caught on a hot mic coming back from break. It became apparent that had gone out over the air, and it was a bad enough, like, irresponsible enough thing that he was obviously going to lose his job and he was going to be fired. And now you have the awkward rest of the game where you have to acknowledge what happened, knowing that you're probably going to be fired. And 4 years later, he's finally resurfaced, getting to do a little bit of stuff here or there. But, I mean, he was a network-level broadcaster, and his career was pretty much over at that moment. But it was 4 years ago, and it still gives so much internet shtick to the fact that every time Nick Castellanos homers, it seems like there's something big going on or something terrible going on in the world. But just the audio will never not be amazing of his mid-apology talking about the awful thing that just happened that ruined his life and his career's over. And then Castellanos hits a homer and he has to discuss it with zero excitement.
I shouldn't be laughing.
I pride myself and think of myself as a man of faith. As there's a drive in a deep left field by Castellanos, it will be a home run. And so that'll make it a 4-0 ball game. I don't know if I'm going to be putting on this headset again. I don't know if it's going to be for the Reds. I don't know if it's going to be for my bosses at Fox. I want to apologize.
And he didn't put on that headset for a long while.
That's one of those where I know I'm not supposed to laugh.
Correct.
I cannot help it.
Well, the internet has been laughing for a few years. Because, I mean, Castellanos, for people that don't know, like, there is now a bit where the next one, I think, they were talking about a charity or something and someone who had passed away and he hit a home run. And it was just like...
Yeah, and there's a drive by Castellanos.
Anytime in a game where he's playing, the new rule is, if he's at the plate, you can't do the serious thing, man.
Right.
You can't have the conversation about the...
Let's hold off on the disaster relief.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like, Castellanos knows what you're doing. This is a little harder to hear. If it doesn't work, I'll pull out of this one. But Peyton Manning gave his top five quarterbacks, which I think is pretty interesting. We've never heard him rank his current QBs.
Quarterbacks need to be coached hard. And Andy Reid coaches Patrick Mahomes hard. And that's good for Patrick. That's bad for NFL defenses, right? So, Patrick Mahomes, number one. That rankings are so hard. You get in so much trouble. You get mad about that. I'm a big fan of Joe Burrow. Right? I'm glad to see him. I'm glad to see him back healthy. Right? I like the way he carries himself. I like his demeanor out there. He doesn't sweat. He doesn't flinch. Right? He's just kind of calm and cool the whole time. This Justin Herbert is as talented as anybody. He can throw it a mile. He can throw it a mile. Harbaugh, as, you know, like I said, the Broncos division is going to be tough. I mean, Lamar Jackson does things that just don't seem possible with the football in his hand. He makes throws, he runs, and he's smart about, you know, he protects himself too, right? I mean, look, I never could run, so I never had that problem, right? But, you know, the thing we were talking about earlier, quarterbacks, you know, they like to run. You still got to find a way to get out of bounds or get down and be there on the next play, right? If you get hurt, I mean, look, defenses, if the quarterback, you know, gets hurt, they're probably going to win that game. Right. So I love the way Lamar carries himself. I think he'll have a great year this year.
One more.
I mean, this, like I said, Josh Allen.
He goes Mahomes, Burrow, Herbert, Lamar, Allen. I don't know if he was ranking them, but those are the five
guys
quarterbacks that Peyton Manning named. Speaking of former NFL quarterbacks, you know how many times we talked about whether Washington was going to bring in Cam Newton? Apparently, we weren't alone in wondering that. When Ron Rivera was here, all the Panthers brass was here. It seemed like a no-brainer with Cam not having a job and them having quarterbacks in flux at the position, you know, that wasn't solved. Cam apparently was sitting by his phone waiting year after year for the Commanders to call. Now, this was Cam recently talking about this on his podcast.
Cam, why do you think Ron Rivera never called you to Washington? And what did you all say to each other during the halftime in your first game back with Carolina?
I don't know. It hurt me, though.
Mm. Did you think you was going to get that?
Yeah. I said, at the bare minimum, Washington to come with me. It wasn't just Ron Rivera. It was damn Marty Herney.
Oh, okay.
It was Ryan Vermillion. Everybody. It was Panthers reincarnated in Washington. Did not get no call?
No interest. Have y'all ever spoke about that?
Nah.
Yeah.
Nah. I don't know why. But I don't know whether I was hurt or whatever. It with me though.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't gonna lie. I'm not gonna be one of these dudes like, hell no. Like, you got this coach of the year on not just you alone, but with your help.
Yep.
We started the 2013 season 1-3, finished 12-4. Coach of the year. Of course, you've been through
the struggle.
Been through the struggle with him.
I'm surprised with that mindset he didn't reach out to Ron at some point.
Like, yeah.
Hey man, you gonna throw your guy a bone here? But just a trip down memory lane on the Commanders when he's like, it was damn near
because it wasn't Panthers, just Ron Rivera.
Panthers reincarnated. Like, we remember.
No, we know.
You have a pretty good Patrick Mahomes impression. Travis Kelce apparently mm-hmm. also has a Patrick Mahomes
this
impression.
Is good.
After Mahomes talked about that the behind-the-back throw he made to Kelce wasn't an actual play. It was just kind of schoolyard ball, which clearly wasn't the case. It was a real play. Kelce was asked about that on the sideline on the Chiefs preseason game.
Patrick said that the behind-the-back pass was improvised. That wasn't a play. What do you have to say?
It wasn't a play. No, it was a play. It was a first down. You know, he's got the voice thing, and so he kind of mumbled out the play. I couldn't hear it. I was walking up to the line. I was like trying to decipher what he was saying. Before I knew it, he snapped the ball, and then I kind of saw him out of my peripheral run to the sideline. So I was trying to go help my guy out. By the time I looked over there, he was already in mid-form, like a photo on a sports card, throwing the ball to me. So it was just I guess right place at the right time.
Danny, how do you feel about the Kelce Mahomes impression?
Really good. He's got the right thing, because what most people do is they start going Kermit the Frog, right? They start doing that and they're like, that's Mahomes. He has the gravel part of it, right? So obviously if you want to start doing Pat Mahomes, you got to get down a little bit lower, and some of the words and letters that come out are harder, like that. You hear that part of it? Like, he's got the Kermit plus the gravel. He's doing that. He's like making the sound.
Voice thing.
You hear it? Like, it's like, what? Like, hey, Travis, what does an electric razor from the 1990s that plugs into the wall, what does that sound like? Like, you hear that? You want to do Mahomes, you got to be a Norelco from 93.
Okay, then it's good tips.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was the coaching point.
Uh-huh.
Finally, Raheem Morris did not play Michael Penix in preseason game 2. He's not going to play in preseason game 3. I now officially have no idea what's going on with the Falcons.
I don't know what they're doing.
Penix plan. To draft him didn't make sense, but at least maybe you got your quarterback of the future. You go 1 or 2 years with Cousins, and then you turn things over to Penix. Maybe. But you want him to get reps. The only way he can do it is in the preseason, except that they already shut him down in the preseason, and Raheem was asked why.
Last week, we wanted to get him out there and get a feel for what he was in live game, which we kind of already knew. Wanted to see him be able to answer questions, talk about it on the sideline, go out there and execute, make mistakes, and know what to do. Like when he looked the wrong way, getting right to the check down. He did a lot of those things a lot, but it took a hit last week, should have changed the protection. He's able to clearly communicate those things. I mean, we've seen enough last week of Michael Penix and the live stuff, and now we had the chance to mitigate him in practice. And you know, we give him a bunch of live stuff out there in practice that you do everything that you would do in a game other than get hit. But you know, we feel really good where we're at with Michael. We feel really good where we're at with the other guys that we set, and we treated that the same way. But Mike showed us last week enough that we don't have to play him in the preseason.
Wow. I'm just a very curious way to go about your backup quarterback, who, if your plan goes accordingly,
right,
won't be on the field this year. I do love Raheem Morris, though. I'm rooting for him. He was an awesome guy to get to know here when he was with the Commanders. With Danny, I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. Speaking of Michael Penix, all the rookie quarterbacks are faring very well. That's next on G&D.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, G&D on the Fan. Thank you for making the show part of your day. Means a lot. We're taking you up to Nats baseball at 6:15. Very, very cool of the coaching staff over at Marymount University and head baseball coach Mike Cassidy to send some hats over for me and you, Dan.
Yes, bro.
If you're checking us out on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page, you can see the hats that they sent over. So
sharp right there.
I always like when I find out that some of these programs that we'll track or see occasionally on TV or get to know a little bit just locally over the years that we've got listeners running programs. So the coaching staff over there are fans of 106.7 The Fan, and the skipper, Mike Cassidy, kind enough to send us over some gear. So it's very awesome. We appreciate that.
My sister's an alumnus. She went to grad school at Marymount University.
Is that right?
Right there. Absolutely, yeah.
I love that. So thanks to them. Just being nice.
Just nice.
Just giving us stuff. We didn't ask for anything. And they thought of us. That's very, very sweet.
We're only about 50,000 of those away from being the junks.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean? Just, we'll get there.
The junks are good at it. They're very good at that.
Jason has the right lure for every situation.
He does. Now, Jason, he's good, man. He's a sharp cookie. He has the ability to ask for things without actually asking for them.
The Kurt angle. He always has it.
He does. I've joned on you a couple times after segments where like you'll do a double play or something, and I'm like, you're definitely just kind of putting your fishing hook in the water, right? That's, we call that a bishop. When you bait that hook and you throw it out there every now and then, you're like, you know, I really like pickleball.
I'm looking for some place to play. You don't have a good recommendation for free? Yeah, come on.
But nobody better than Bish Bucks.
The greatest of all time.
He could write a book at that. I mean, he really could.
He's seriously good. He's got a lure for every lake, every pond, every little tributary.
How big is his tackle box?
It's so big.
I mean, he's caught some fish now.
He's got, unbelievable.
He's got a live
he's
well.
He's the greatest angler. He's got a fish for every, a rod for every occasion.
Amazing. But that was very nice. So,
thank you, guys.
Thank you. That's a good-looking cap. I might even wear it over to Nats Park this evening.
Hello.
I like a brand-new cap. It's like new socks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, throw it on.
Crisp.
Wear it in a little bit. It'll be good. All the rookie quarterbacks look really, really impressive. That's one of the reasons why I find myself hesitant to get fully in on what we've seen from Jaden Daniels so far. Fair or not fair? That I would use that against him in a sense. Like, between, I think he's going to be terrible on the very left end of the spectrum, which nobody should be thinking right now, to the very right end of the spectrum, which is what we'll call full Bickle to keep the Junkies theme going, where Bickle today basically proclaimed him bust-proof and said that he's going to be one of the greatest quarterbacks in the league, and there's no way he's not. He's already seen enough. Like, I'm not on the Bickle side of things. But one of the reasons I'm a little bit still nervous, I guess, or need to see more, is who hasn't looked great among these young quarterbacks? And I just don't believe that they're all going to be good. History tells us that that's almost certainly not the case. So McCarthy, before he was hurt, played once. He was amazing. Bo Nix has played two times. He's been outstanding. Caleb Williams has played twice. I would say it's been, not splendid, but like really good, and he's had some unreal flash plays. Michael Penix played once, and the Falcons saw enough, liked him enough, that they're not playing him again the rest of this preseason. Like, every single one of these young quarterbacks, the numbers have been good, the stats look like they've been accurate, and the ball placement's been there, and it tells you that maybe it's just easier this time of year than it's going to be in several weeks.
Yeah, it's always so hard, right? Because we're so hyper-focused here, we're looking for our microphone glass at this one individual situation.
Microphone glass.
Microphone glass, but we're not as consumed with the totality of it, and so you and I are, and others, I'm sure, are going, hey, let's try to quantify this thing. Is he standing out, or is this individual player doing this? Where we go, for example, we've done it with Terry McLaurin in the past, where we go, God, I love Terry, he's awesome. Yeah, Terry's good. He's not one of these 17 other guys that puts up way bigger numbers, and there's context and nuance to it, but it's a way to kind of quantify it, right? So I'm trying to go back and remember, in 2023, what were we doing it would have been 22, I guess, or maybe 21. I can't remember. With Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance. Were they balling out in training camp and preseason games? All three, and then one of those guys, bona fide starter, contract extension, the other two guys on their third team or whatever the hell, right? I don't know. I don't know exactly what the case was then. Last year, the era of good feelings was some first-time starters, including here with Sam Howell after playing pretty well in the preseason. So the preseason doesn't mean that much in terms of being predictive of overall gameplay. The criteria and questions, though, that we're asking about a specific player, I think it is important. You can still learn stuff about the individual player. And I guess what I mean is, what were our questions about Jaden Daniels, if there were some? Again, I'm confident I like the kid a lot, like the player a lot. But my question was, is he going to be able to protect himself because he's so thin? I don't know the answer to that yet. But can he, still do some of the same things that he was doing on Saturdays at LSU at this level and make it look easy? Yeah. So I've got some data points, right, for each individual guy. So is it gospel? No. But I don't know that I'd go as far as to say none of this matters. We can't give him anything, any positive remarks, because other guys are playing well too.
So it's way, 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 way too early to care about numbers at all. In terms of sample size, forget that the preseason numbers are irrelevant largely anyway. But I just mean in terms of how many throws guys have made, there's really not enough to dive into. But I'm going to do it anyway just for the sake of the point I'm making, which is to say we are watching Daniels in D.C. and we're high-fiving and getting excited and he looks great. But if you juxtapose what he's done with the other quarterbacks, he just kind of is one of them. He just fits in the middle of the rookie quarterback pack. So Zach Kruger, who covers fantasy football for RotoWorld, have put together a chart of big-time throw percentage, adjusted completion percentage, yards per attempt, ADOT, all these things. Again, I'm not studying these numbers to take anything out of how guys are playing. I'm just showing you that in the preseason, as good as Daniels has looked, it's kind of also what McCarthy, Williams, Nix, Penix, May are doing. So as an example, big-time throw percentage. Caleb Williams, 13% of his throws have been big time. Drake May, 13.3%. Michael Penix, 6.3%. Bo Nix, 3.1%. Daniel, 6.7%. McCarthy, 5.9%. So that would have Daniels like third of the six guys so far. Again, that means you've made two or three big time throws because the sample's too small. Yards per attempt. McCarthy's first, 11.1. Daniels is second, 8.2. Then Williams, Nix, Penix, and May in that order. Obviously, with Daniels, he had the 42-yarder. That explosive play when the sample's so small is going to be big. But if you're looking for average depth of target, like how far are you throwing the ball downfield, what's being asked of you, Williams, on average, 12 yards downfield per throw. McCarthy, 10. Drake May, 8.7. Penix, 8.6. Nix, 7.3. In this particular category, Daniels is last, 5.5. And his ADOT would be the lowest of any quarterback last year that started. Doesn't mean that's what it's going to be during the season. I'm not saying that. It is worth acknowledging just to say they have had him throw more balls around or behind the line of scrimmage than any of the other young quarterbacks so far. So my point is just to say Daniels has been great, and I am excited, and I'm actually more encouraged probably just from the practice stuff that I saw and the games as well where he's been really good and had command. But my overall point is they're saying the same thing in Chicago, Denver, Atlanta, New England. Like, none of these guys has looked lost. None has struggled, really. And while Daniels is 2-for-2, so is Bo Nix. I wouldn't trade Jaden Daniels for Bo Nix right now. You know what I'm saying?
Correct. Yes, I do.
I'm probably still glad they have Daniels over Bo Nix, who, by the way, I was listening to Sean Payton talk about him today when he was interviewing with Diana Rossini for The Athletic. And my God, he loves Bo Nix. He was talking about how he's number one in like 10 different analytical categories they divvied up before the draft, and he watched 16 throws.
Most games played in college ever. Most years in college ever. Right. The Van Wilder Award. No, I'm
kidding. No, but he watched 16 throws and said, this is who we're taking. I mean, there was some really interesting stuff that he loved about Bo Nix that made me think, wow, okay. Like, I believed him when he was saying it. Now, we'll see if he's right, but he loves Bo Nix.
Because I think he sees Drew Brees 2.0. But back to the Daniels case of it, or the point here. I mean, to me, the most important thing is the milestones for development and the patience that we all need to have. We want to microwave this thing because we've been starving for decades, but I'm not ready to slam the gavel in any direction. It kind of goes to the topic we had towards the top of the show, talking about are you completely sold yet? Like, I'm as confident as you can be at this point, but there's still so many tests yet to come.
A former first-round pick did something pretty egregious and is in big, big trouble. Grant and Danny on The Fan. He's Danny, I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. How much have you followed the back and forth between Noah Lyles and Tyreek Hill?
Very little. I remember Noah Lyles got some people irritated because he was like, what do you mean champions of the world? Champions of what? Just North America or something talking about basketball? But I haven't followed.
So that has nothing to do with it.
Okay, something different.
In the Olympics. So Tyreek Hill basically said he could beat Noah Lyles or wants to race him or something like that. Noah Lyles came back out and was like, I've never heard of that person. He pretends to not know who Tyreek Hill is, which is, come on, Noah. Come on, buddy. You know who Tyreek Hill is. He says he does. He's never heard of Nikola Jokic. I guess he just doesn't watch any sports whatsoever, apparently, which is why he was disrespectful to the world championships, one and the other sports, when he's like, it's not a world championship. It's just the Super Bowl. It's just the NBA. As if there's a team somewhere in the globe that would beat the NBA or the NFL team. But anyway, I guess he just really legitimately does not like sports. But so he was like disrespectful to and dismissive of Tyreek Hill, saying he doesn't know him, but they'd gladly race him. And Tyreek Hill thinks he'd give him a run for his money, which sounds like the dumbest thing in the world. And it probably is, except there was video on a Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football game a few years ago from when Tyreek Hill was 16 and racing, and they had him like the line where he would have been with the Olympic group. And like Usain Bolt eventually pulls away and beats him.
Yeah, and it's not that far off.
He was literally neck and neck with all the dudes competing for the silver medal at the Olympics.
Yeah. He's got world-class speed.
World-class. So I think what he wants to do is not do like a 100, which is a little longer, but he wants to do like a 50-yard dash or something. And he's telling Noah Lyles he would beat him. And I actually think he would. Because Noah Lyles is bit. I know nothing about track and field, just look at me. Mm-hmm. Is that he gets off to slow starts. And he finishes really fast.
Because he came up as a 200 runner, right? So that's basically half a lap. Whereas, you know, so you get those longer strides. And now I know he finished third in this year's 200, but that's where he gained his fame. Then he said, you know, I'm fast enough on these closes. Maybe I could do a 100. So his struggle is the first part, the same way Usain Bolt's was, right? Because his strides were so long, big and tall. But then once he gets the top speed, nobody can touch it. So Lyles, I think, was in last place as of 60 yards or 60 meters in this thing. Then, of course, comes back to win it over the course of the 100.
Am I crazy for thinking if they did a 50-yard dash that Tyreek Hill would beat him?
Not crazy at all.
I think he would.
Not crazy at all. I'm not telling you that Noah Lyles isn't the fastest person in the world and the gold medalist. He is. We saw it. We've got data now. This isn't just, his guy would beat that guy. I saw him when I was sober in 19. No. We got numbers. We have like that line or whatever the hell that is. The same thing that does the world record line for swimming. The time is the time. Yeah.
Until I saw that, it's not a graphic, but like that video.
Yeah, whatever that is. Yeah.
Edited video. I said, well, this is just ridiculous. This is just like any guy saying I'd beat him.
I could throw the football over that mountain.
And then I saw the Tyreek Hill line with the Olympians coming around the bend, and he's keeping up with, and then he falls back from winning. But he's still right there with all the dudes in the second, third mix. And like as Money Metal Chris was saying, we're used to seeing him run in pads.
Yeah.
I mean, if they ran in pads, obviously Noah Lyles is not competing. But Tyreek Hill without pads, which we haven't really seen, I think he beats him. Now, 100 meters, you're going to lose. How far until he catches you and dusts you? That I don't know. But I'd actually pay to see it. They'd have to do it in the offseason. And is Tyreek Hill at the end of this season still as fast as he is? And now, maybe. I think like the best time to do this is this moment, but we're not going to get it obviously before the season.
Why now?
Do you believe Noah Lyles when he says he's never heard of Tyreek Hill or Nikola Jokic?
No, that's a bit. They're not in my bubble. I'm above them in some kind of way. I'm a world champion. They're like a local.
He doesn't have
contender.
To be that way. I don't get why he's like trying to make enemies.
Yeah, it's kind of his persona. He's a me against the world type guy. Remember years ago, you were too young for this, but Maurice Greene was the fastest man in the world. Ran the 100. Michael Johnson was the fastest 200, 400 runner.
Gold shoes, Michael Johnson.
Yeah. They ran a 150-meter race to try to settle it, and Johnson pulled up lame with a pulled hamstring. But there was a little bit of a rivalry between those guys. But that sort of stuff, I'm all for.
Yeah.
Bring me that.
Lastly, I teased this, so I want to pay this off. This is a ridiculous story. This guy named Gosler Cherilis. Do you know this name?
I know that name.
He played
that?
In the NFL. He's
former guard.
He was an offensive lineman at one point in time. He got in trouble and arrested for allegedly, and I have to be careful with how I say this, on an airplane. He got upset with a lady who was 78 years old, and he walked over, and he exposed himself and then went to the bathroom on the person. One of the grossest, worst things I've ever heard happen, number one. But number two, when did people become so insane on airplanes? Like, I know I'm only hearing one story of thousands of flights every day, but, like, that doesn't happen in public on an airplane until now. Do you ever get on an airplane now and just think, who's the crazy bastard who's going to ruin everything for everyone?
Yes, by the way. Yes, that's all I do.
It's all I think about. Like,
I scan.
Flew. how often when you get on a plane now, I'm like looking around going, who's the guy that we're going to have to, you know, deal
with? It's me.
With?
I'm just going to say it's me.
You're the person yelling at people?
No.
I don't know. Maybe. No.
I don't think you are.
No. I do like the Southwest thing where you pick your seat and I just try to get on, be quiet, and get an aisle seat. That's
yes,
what I want.
You're doing,
you know,
it correctly.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that the guy that's going to try to fight everyone, the guy that is going to start screaming that he sees a ghost or whatever it is, the drunk person is going to throw up everywhere. Why do you cannot get on a flight, I don't feel like now, Danny, based on at least the social media algorithm.
Here comes the viral moment.
Where someone is acting like a fool.
So my argument is that this has always been, but we just know now. Right? Because now people can just turn on the cell phone and turn it around and see the weird thing. Because travel brings out the worst in everybody. Travel sucks. It's always awful. Right? Best case scenario, it's regular miserable. Worst case scenario, this is delayed or this turns off or you get bad news at home or there's a million other things that are going wrong. This guy over here is on peyote. This person just broke up with somebody. I mean, it's always been terrible,
story
but now we've got a phone.
Cleveland.com says he appeared drunk when he boarded the plane, according to the police report, was allegedly unhappy with his seat assignment, according to court documents. During the flight, the 9-year NFL veteran approached a woman in another seat and began doing the thing he shouldn't have done.
Yep.
Going to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Please don't do that.
Don't do that.
Like, I'm not good at a lot of things. I'm great at not doing
I'm
that.
I'm amazing at that. I'm so good at it.
By the way, how drunk do you have to be?
I've been pretty hammered in my day. That's never...
Does he think he's at a toilet? Because, like, when you're young in college or something, I could see someone, like, waking up in the morning, having a dream that they thought they were in front of the bathroom or something. Like, that's embarrassing, but if you told me that happened to you when you're 19, okay, maybe. Middle of the airplane. Sorry, lady. I thought you were the toilet.
Yeah, that's tough.
By the way, I'm 40.
My teammate and roommate, as a collegian, utilized the refrigerator out of confusion. Again, that was a big night. That was a huge night. So that cleanup wasn't great.
That's not fun.
No.
Better than the 78-year-old lady who's across the row.
Yes.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. We'll get you ready for Nats baseball and hit all the headlines of the day. We're taking you up to 6:15 on G&D.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. How much have you followed the back and forth between Noah Lyles and Tyreek Hill?
Very little. I remember Noah Lyles got some people irritated because he was like, what do you mean champions of the world? Champions of what? Just North America or something talking about basketball? But I haven't followed.
So that has nothing to do with it.
Okay, something different.
In the Olympics. So Tyreek Hill basically said he could beat Noah Lyles or wants to race him or something like that. Noah Lyles came back out and was like, I've never heard of that person. He pretends to not know who Tyreek Hill is, which is, come on, Noah, come on, buddy. You know who Tyreek Hill is. He says he's never heard of Nikola Jokic. I guess he just doesn't watch any sports whatsoever, apparently, which is why he was disrespectful to the world championships, one and the other sports, when he's like, it's not a world championship, it's just the Super Bowl, it's just the NBA, as if there's a team somewhere in the globe that would beat the NBA or the NFL team. But anyway, I guess he just really legitimately does not like sports. But so he was like disrespectful to and dismissive of Tyreek Hill, saying he doesn't know him, but they'd gladly race him. And Tyreek Hill thinks he could give him a run for his money, which sounds like the dumbest thing in the world. And it probably is, except there was video on a Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football game a few years ago from when Tyreek Hill was 16 and racing, and they had him, like, the line where he would have been with the Olympic group, and, like, Usain Bolt eventually pulls away and beats him.
Yeah, and it's not that far off.
He was literally neck and neck with all the dudes competing for the silver medal at the Olympics.
Yeah. He's got world-class speed.
World-class. So I think what he wants to do is not do, like, a 100, which is a little longer, but he wants to do, like, a 50-yard dash or something. And he's telling Noah Lyles he would beat him. And I actually think he would. because Noah Lyles' bit, I know nothing about track and field, just look at me, is that he gets off to slow starts and he finishes really fast.
Because he's been, he came up as a 200 runner, right? So that's that. That's basically half a lap. Whereas, you know, so you get those longer strides, and now I know he finished third in this year's 200, but that's where he gained his fame. Then he said, you know, I'm fast enough on these closes, maybe I could do a 100. So his struggle is the first part, the same way Usain Bolt's was, right? Because his strides were so long, big and tall, but then once he gets the top speed, nobody can touch it. So Lyles, I think, was in last place as of 60 yards or 60 meters in this thing. Then, of course, comes back to win it over the course of the 100.
Am I crazy for thinking if they did a 50-yard dash that Tyreek Hill would beat him?
Not crazy at all.
I think he would.
Not crazy at all. I actually, and again, this isn't, I'm not telling you that Noah Lyles isn't the fastest person in the world and the gold medalist. He is. We saw it. We've got data now. This isn't just, his guy would beat that guy. I saw him when I was sober in 19. No, no, no. We got numbers. We have like that line or whatever the hell that is. The same thing that does the world record line for swimming.
That's the
time is the time. Yeah.
Until I saw that, it's not a graphic, but like that video.
Yeah, whatever that is. Yeah.
Edited video. I said, well, this is just ridiculous. This is just like any guy saying I'd beat him.
I could throw the football over that mountain.
And then I saw the Tyreek Hill line with the Olympians coming around the bend, and he's keeping up with, and he's keeping up with, and then he falls back from winning, but he's still right there with all the dudes in the second, third mix. And like as Money Metal Chris was saying, we're used to seeing him run in pads.
Yeah.
I mean, if they ran in pads, obviously Noah Lyles is not competing. But Tyreek Hill without pads, which we haven't really seen, I think he beats him. Now, 100 meters, you're going to lose. How far until he catches you and dusts you? That I don't know. But I'd actually pay to see it. They'd have to do it in the offseason. And is Tyreek Hill at the end of this season still as fast as he is? And now, maybe. I think like the best time to do this is this moment. But we're not going to get it, obviously,
right,
before the
Why
season.
Now?
Do you believe Noah Lyles when he says he's never heard of Tyreek Hill or Nikola Jokic?
No, that's a bit. That they're not in my bubble. I'm above them in some kind of way. I'm a world champion. They're like a local contender.
He doesn't have
contender.
To be that way. I don't get why he's... He's like trying to make enemies.
Yeah, it's kind of his persona. He's a me against the world type guy. Remember years ago, you were too young for this, but Maurice Greene was the fastest man in the world, ran the 100. Michael Johnson was the fastest 200, 400 runner.
Gold shoes, Michael Johnson.
Yeah, they ran a 150-meter race to try to settle it, and Johnson pulled up lame with a pulled hamstring, but there was a little bit of a rivalry between those guys. But that sort of stuff, I'm all for.
Yeah.
Bring me that.
Lastly, I tease this, so I want to pay this off. This is a ridiculous story. This guy named Gosder Cherilis, do you know this name?
I know that name.
He
Who is that?
He played in the NFL. He was
former guard?
He was an offensive lineman at one point in time. He got in trouble and arrested for allegedly, and I have to be careful with how I say this, on an airplane, he got upset with a lady who was 78 years old, and he walked over, and he exposed himself and then went to the bathroom on the person. One of the grossest, worst things I've ever heard happen, number one. But number two, when did people become so insane on airplanes? Like, I know I'm only hearing one story of thousands of flights every day, but like, that doesn't happen in public on an airplane until now. Do you ever get on an airplane now and just think, who's the crazy bastard who's going to ruin everything from everyone?
Yes, by the way. Yes, that's all I do.
It's all I think about. Like,
I just flew.
How often, when you get on a plane now, I'm like looking around going, who's the guy that we're going to have to, you know, deal with?
It's me. I'm just going to say it's me.
You're the person yelling at people?
No.
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe. No, no.
I don't think you are.
No. I do like the Southwest thing where you pick your seat and I just try to get on, be quiet, and get an aisle seat. That's what I want.
You're doing
it
correctly.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that the guy that's going to try to fight everyone, the guy that is going to start screaming that he sees a ghost or whatever it is, the drunk person is going to throw up everywhere. You cannot get on a flight, I don't feel like now, Danny, based on at least the social media algorithm.
Here comes the viral moment.
Where someone is acting like a fool.
So my argument is that this has always been, but we just know now. Right? Because now people can just turn on the cell phone and turn it around and see the weird thing. Because travel brings out the worst in everybody. Travel sucks. It's always awful. Right? Best case scenario, it's regular miserable. Worst case scenario, this is delayed or this turns off or you get bad news at home or there's a million other things that are going wrong. This guy over here is on peyote. This person just broke up with somebody. I mean, it's always been terrible,
Story
but now we've got a phone.
Cleveland.com says he appeared drunk when he boarded the plane, according to the police report, was allegedly unhappy with his seat assignment, according to court documents. During the flight, the 9-year NFL veteran approached a woman in another seat and began doing the thing he shouldn't have done.
Yep.
Going to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Please don't do that.
Don't do that.
Like, I'm not good at a lot of things. I'm great at not doing
I'm
that.
Amazing at that. I'm so good at it.
By the way, how drunk do you have to be?
I mean, I've been pretty hammered in my day. That's never.
Does he think he's at a toilet? It's like when you're young in college or something, I could see someone like waking up in the morning, having a dream that they thought they were in front of the bathroom or something. Like, that's embarrassing. But if you told me that happened to you when you're 19, okay, maybe. Middle of the airplane. Sorry, lady. I thought you were the toilet.
Yeah, that's tough.
By the way, I'm 40.
My teammate and roommate as a collegian utilized the refrigerator out of confusion. Again, that was a big night. That was a huge night. So that cleanup wasn't great.
It's not fun.
No.
Better than the 78-year-old lady who's across the row.
Yes.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. We'll get you ready for Nats baseball and hit all the headlines of the day. We're taking you up to 6:15 on G&D.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.